So thank you, everybody who's read. Take this opportunity to welcome anybody that may have joined us since we first started. A huge welcome to any visitors to our meeting and a massive welcome to any newcomers. And we hope you're going to hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. And like I said, we are a speaker meeting and it falls on me to introduce our speaker this evening. I'm really pleased actually to introduce this person. We have a very similar clean time. We got clean within a few months of, within a few weeks of each other, actually. I'm sure he'll share about that if he chooses to. And I've met him recently. Our paths have never really crossed. I've met him, encountered this individual over the last few months in the course of service, and it's been a real pleasure to get to know him. I'm really looking forward to his story, his journey to, through, and into Narcotics Anonymous. And we're going to ask him to share for 40, 45 minutes on his experience, strength, and hope on that journey. So, Hilmay, without any further ado, please share with us. Thank you and welcome to the meeting.
Thank you very much. Hilmay, I'm an addict, Steve. Thank you.
Hi,
Hilmay. Hello, Hilmay.
People I can't see, but I love very much. I know that already by listening to your voices. Brilliant. You don't normally get that when you go to meetings, and normally you see people face to face, and then but this meeting is quite different, because I noticed the last time I was here, I felt really connected to everyone. You know, it was really nice, and that connection is, I trust and love that connection more than any, that's the one I look at mostly, is the one that's inside us. You know, so it's really nice to meet you all, definitely, and thanks, Steve. I got to apologise for that disturbance. I while the meeting was on, I had a call on my home number, and that was another addict that sort of disappeared for a few months. She, you know, I don't know what happened. So I think she got into a relationship, and she called while the microphone was on, so it was a bit disruptive. I do apologise for that. But at the moment, there's absolutely nothing I can do about what's going on now. So I'll give her a call after the meeting. So, Hilmy, who am I? Biggest question anyone needs to ask is, who am I? What am I? Where am I come from? You know, my background was, my parents came over this country from Cyprus, you know, just after the war in 46, I think, but in the early 50s, my dad came over, and then my mum came over, then we were all born, there's five of us all together, and three of us are really fucked up, and the eldest one is a devout Jehovah's Witness, and the youngest one is completely the opposite. Got no God at all in their life and hates everything to do with God. You know, so the other three in the middle, which includes me, I'm right in the middle, you know, and left to find my own journey. And, you know, it was really difficult growing up. You know, it was hard. When I say that, not because, you know, it was foreigners or anything like that. It's because the home circumstances was atrocious. You know, it was really, there was an incident of sexual abuse that happened. This was not inside the immediate home. This was from one of the neighbours across the street when he got me to go round there. I think the most disturbing part of growing up though was what my dad used to do, which was the beatings, the anger, the pain. And I think because of my circumstances of growing up and what happened, I won't go into detail, but what happened was very traumatic. And as a child, I found ways, right, to escape from my reality. It's the best way I can explain it. I basically lived in a fantasy world. My brother, me and my brother just older than me, we used to be Batman and Robin, which was really nice. And we used to have our little places that we used to go to, you know, in the backyards and finding toys in the bins and stuff like that. And then all the stuff that people used to throw out the windows in the flats. And we used to have the old washing lines going across, you know, in the yards. And you know, and that's how we grew up. And you know, I was constantly running away from home, you know. And during those early years, I learned to steal, you know, to nick lead off the roofs. I used to truant from school, you know. And when I reached the age of 10, before I got to 10, it carried on. But when I got to the age of 10, I got the first time I ever got arrested. And I said I didn't want to go home because I knew what would happen. You know, I knew what my dad would do. And although my dad was really brutal, you know, I know that he was really messed up as well. You know, he grew up without a father and I think six brothers and one sister. And that's how he grew up. So, you know, that was his life. So he didn't have any idea at all about being a father and what we needed as children. So anyway, I, you know, 10 years old, like, you know, I ended up in the children's home for a couple of years, came out of children's, but even when I got to a children's home, I was I kept the behaviour, you know. We nicked the cash box, me and someone else nicked the cash box in the children's home, nicked his rifle, and run off down to the children's home was in Hawkins, and we nicked them and went to Folkestone, you know. And eventually we got found by the police, and the police brought us back to the children's home because we were reported missing, you know. We hid the rifle, and luckily I found it, you know. So the behaviour carried on, you know. And then I was there for a couple of years, you know. When I think back to them years, I actually really enjoyed it, you know. I used to think negatively of it, you know. Oh, look, poor me, I used to be in the children's home. But the fact is, I really enjoyed it, you know. We used to go camping, we used to go for walks along the cliffs and stuff like that, you know. And it was really nice, you know. So anyway, we came out of children's home, come back to home, you know. And by that time, the family had moved to somewhere else, and the behaviour carried on. Although my dad wasn't the same person, he wasn't violent anymore, you know, there was still that fear. You know, I remember coming out of treatment centre, you know, going to visit him, right? And after I visited him, I'd leave him, and I'd feel rattled, you know, and it'd last for a couple of days, you know, two or three days. I'd start feeling really uncomfortable. You know, the last night, I don't even know how to explain it. It's like something inside me was maybe fear, you know, but something happened to me, was going on inside, and you know, and that happened every time I went to see him. And one day I sat down and I told him, you know, and he didn't know what to do, you know. I could just, you know, I was watching him, he just started fiddling around, started moving bits and pieces on the table. You know, and you know, this was when I was in recovery. But anyway, after coming out of children's home moving back in with the family, the crime didn't stop, and for the next 15-20 years, the crime really took off. And the drugs came in as well, which started drinking first and then puffing and then amphetamines and all the other stuff started coming in, and cocaine and crack and heroin. And, you know, life became a vicious circle of girls, institution. I'm lucky I didn't die. Well, I'm not sure if I've died or not, if I'm honest with you, but you know, that became a vicious circle for the next, well, I think 15-20 years. I couldn't stop. Once I started, I couldn't stop. I knew there was something wrong. I couldn't place it. I didn't know what it was, you know. And the habits that I developed to escape from my reality as a child, they were some of my character defects. And I think today I think to myself, do you know what? I think I'm quite fortunate, lucky, you know, that I've found ways and means to escape from my reality. I'm lucky that I went to prison, you know, because that gave me a break from the drugs and the life I was leading, you know. My brother, who's just older than me, my sister's who's younger than me, you know, I don't want to say they're not addicts, but what I will say is they've both been sectioned quite a few times, and they're both under mental health, and that's just above me and below me. So when I say I'm lucky, I didn't go in that direction. I'm lucky that I took drugs and helped me escape from my lucky I went to prison, you know, which gave me that break. And anyway, I was running in my last court case, but in one court case, I got arrested, and I owned that I had a drug problem. And the reason I did that was to get out of prison, because my cellmate told me that he had a friend that had a drug problem, and he went to treatment centre. And I'd, at this point, I'd never heard of treatment centre or NA or AA or any 12-step fellowship at that. I didn't have a clue, you know. The world that I lived in before that was just crime, drugs and prison. That was it. That was my world from the age of, 13, 14. And it was a progression from that age. Stanford House, 18 months detention, Ballstall training, detention centre, and you know, and that is the journey I went on, you know. And I'm in another prison. I'm in the prison cell. And I said, right, I'm going to get out of this. This is my thinking. I've had enough of it. As I said, I always knew there was something wrong, but never knew what it was. You know, I couldn't place it. You know, and I didn't have a clue. So I said, you know, I called the probation up and said to the probation, look, I've got a drug problem. So they had a little chat. And said, okay, we call up a treatment centre. And they called up a treatment centre who came to visit me. And it was a concept house. It wasn't 12-step based, you know. And it was all that confrontational stuff and circles and screaming and shouting, you know. If I'm honest, I hated every single minute of it, you know. I could not stand it there. And the reason, because that's what I had as a child. And it, you know, it scared the shit out of me, if I'm honest with you. You know, probably done more damage than good, you know. But what I can say is I got my foundation, you know. I got the tools, some of the tools that I needed for recovery. And probably one of the first ones was to look at me. Rather than blame this one, that one, or anybody else or whatever, you know, was to look at myself, you know. And especially what's going on with emotions, with the feelings and who I am, you know. And I'd never really looked at that stuff beforehand, you know. I just didn't have a clue, you know. And I stayed there for about 3 or 4 months, and I was in one group and said, you know, before that, I said I wanted to visit my girlfriend. I wanted her to visit me. So, you know, and in the last group, I said, I want to see my girlfriend. And I had asked before that group And the staff member in that group said to me, no, can't see your girlfriend, right? But because I asked before, right, the staff talked about it and discussed it. And she was the only staff member that turned around and said, yes, he should be allowed to see his girlfriend. Yet she said no in that group. And for some reason, I did not feel comfortable with her no, because what she really wanted to say was yes. All the other staff members said no. And so she had to go with the other staff members. So I sat on the bench and I left, you know. And I came back to London, but I knew the vicious circle that I was in was coming out of prison, coming back to my old environment, hanging out with my old friends, back on the drugs, back at crime. Eventually, I would get arrested and back to prison. That was my circle. That was my life. That's all I knew growing up. And I was coming out of treatment centre, coming back to my old environment, and I knew I needed help. So I went straight to my probation officer, because that was part of the order that the magistrates court said that the sentence was 2 years probation on condition that I stayed at treatment centre or their custody for 18 months. Right. And that was the court order of magistrates. Now, normally my court cases would go to magistrates, then to Crown Court, and then I'd be sentenced. But in this case, it stayed at magistrates. And I remember being on the train going to treatment centre because they gave me a ticket. And there was this immense sense of freedom. Something inside, you know, I actually felt love. I felt loved. I felt something had moved me inside, because I'm sitting on the train. I'm not going to prison. And the judge just turned around and says, Yomi, you can go to treatment centre. You know, that was, for me, it was like a miracle. You know, that I've never had anything like that before from the system, you know. And I did. I went straight to treatment centre. Anyway, going back to coming out of treatment centre, I got back to London. I went straight to my probation officer and I said, I still need help. I still want help, you know. So she pointed me in the direction of a day programme in the Maudsley Hospital in London, and which was also near where I lived. And I went there, and I was really lucky. I was lucky because all the staff were from 12-step fellowships, either NA, AA, whatever, anyway, all different ones. And I went there, and I really liked it, because it wasn't unlike the treatment centre that I was in, which was all confrontational and placards and stuff like that. This was a completely different type of group, you know. It was just gentle talking, like as we have in an NA meeting. And I've been going there for a couple of months. They said, have you tried NA, Narcotics Anonymous? And I said, oh, no. So I thought, okay, let me try an NA meeting. And I went to my first NA meeting, which was in the same hospital. And for the first time in my life, it was like I found a whole new family. You know, when I walked into that meeting and I saw all them people, and halfway through I had to get up and go out for a cigarette, and I, you know, because we had some chats and stuff like that. And I remember just standing outside and feeling totally comfortable, totally at home. It was like, I felt like I found a whole new family, because in that meeting were people exactly the same as me. My family was like my brother, my sister, my mum, dad, my aunts, my relatives, my friends, none of them, right, could match up to what went on in that room. You know, it was like I found a whole new family, you know, and that also became a power greater than me, you know. So, you know, I started visiting groups, started going to groups regularly. You know, in my early days, I went to all the different 12-step fellowships, all the ones there were about at that time, and felt more comfortable in NA than any other fellowship, you know. And, you know, I always say the same to everybody, you know, I really don't care who it is. People need to find a place where they feel most comfortable, you know. I do service in a treatment centre, and not, you know, sometimes they can't relate to what we share and what goes on in the meeting. So I'll always tell them the same story, is you have to find what you feel comfortable with, you know, and that's the reality, and that's true. You know, people do have to do that, you know. And, you know, I took on commitments, but there was the other side of me that was so used to keep going back to my old friends and visiting people, you know, that I used to use with and commit crimes with, you know. After a few months, I started to visit them as well. And I ended up relapsing, you know. It was on a tiny bit of crack, and it was on a Friday, and I didn't stop using until Sunday afternoon. You know, I was about 6 months clean. And, you know, as soon as I had that one, that where we say one is too many, a thousand never enough, that is so true. I had first-hand experience of that. One is too many and a thousand never enough. You know, because I didn't stop on Friday. I just did not stop right until Sunday afternoon, where I emptied all my resources, and I ended up sitting on the floor, crying my eyes out. You know, I was fucked, you know, of what I'd done, you know. And that was the last time I used, you know. So, I carried on coming back to meetings, took on commitments. I found myself a sponsor. Then after a couple of years of you know, coming to meetings, that what I noticed, I was having, invariably, I was having little breakdowns, you know. Stuff was coming up for me. My experiences were coming up, and just little bits here and there, you know, and I'd start feeling upset and crying. And, you know, I was on a self-employment course once, and it was fucking, you know, I just felt really weird, you know. I know now that's all the stuff that I used to run away from. That's all the stuff that I used to take drugs, because I couldn't face those emotions, you know. Anyway, I was on this self-employment course. I broke down. After a couple of years, I started feeling really insecure. Something was coming up for me. I didn't know what it was, but I didn't like it, and immediately I wanted to escape. I did not want to use again, you know, and I think I stayed clean. But what I did do is I started to commit crimes. I went back into crime again, and, you know, I came to meetings. I shared it a few times. And then eventually stopped coming to meetings. And the fellow I used to commit crimes with, I used to say to him, we're going to get arrested and we're going to go to prison together. And that, committing crimes was the only way at that point that I knew, right, to escape from them emotions of insecurity and you know, quite intense feelings. You know, and what I said to him came true. Eventually, after about a year, we did get arrested. We did go to the same prison. when I got discharged, I came back to London within a couple of weeks, right? I was back at it again. Didn't come to meetings, I was back at it again. You know, started to commit crimes again with someone else. And, sorry, excuse me. I stayed clean because one of the things I remembered was a guy at one of the, it was a massive meet, Brixton meeting, right? It was massive, about 80 people used to come to, 60, 80 people at that time. And it's just a boy, this guy used to shout out, you know, are there any NA related announcement? And all of a sudden you hear this voice in the background, give yourself a break. Whatever happens, don't use. Every week. And it was brilliant, you know, and that whatever happens, don't use, right, stuck with me. And I came out within a couple of weeks, so yeah, I was back at it again, committing crimes, and ended up on behind a wall to a solicitor's office, looking at a policeman in Wales, and he was looking at me. And the shame, the guilt, the embarrassment that I felt, you know, knowing that I'd just come out of prison, you know, and the chances I'm going to get arrested, you know, it was horrible. I felt fucking ashamed of myself, you know. And I had a daughter, parents and my family, and it's like, I've just, you know, I'm not even using them, still committing crimes, you know, it's probably my first addiction. And I just felt really bad, you know, thinking, you know what, I'm going to go back to prison again. By some miracle, some act of God or whatever it was, I got away, you know. And I just remember looking at the policeman in the eyes, and I was looking at him, he was looking at me. And the only thing that separated us was a wall. And I was with someone else at this point, and he got arrested, you know, I got back to London, you know, excuse me. So when I got back, I knew, you know, the fear, it frightened me that much, I stopped. That was it. That was the last crime that I actually went out there to commit intentionally, to you know, to steal some money, you know. That was the last time I'd done that, you know, and that was what, 23, 24 years ago that happened. And I came back to meetings, and I found myself another sponsor, who's, I've still got the same sponsor, and asked him to take me through the steps. Oh, sorry, do excuse me. I should put that on silent. Yeah, so I've got the same sponsor. Started working the steps with him. After about 6 years, 6-7 years, I had I built up a friendship with a lady friend, and she used to call me in the evenings, about 8 o'clock in the evening. And then it went on to 9 o'clock in the evening, 10 o'clock, 11, 12 o'clock, and the conversations were really intense. It was about drug addiction. It was about firearms, people dying, abuse, and this was some of the stuff that was going on with her. And what I didn't know at the time, it was also bringing my stuff up. Yeah. I didn't know that. And then I started feeling the anxiety and the pressure started coming up for me. And then I was around there one day and I just felt really uncomfortable. I could feel emotionally, that's how I can remember, something was going on inside and I didn't understand it. I said to her, Maria, I have to go. And I got up and I left. And this was in Chelsea, and I walked from Chelsea to Rotherhithe, which is right on the other side of London. And I started to break down, and I broke down. I used to break down for the next month. This lasted 2 or 3 times a day. I just used to cry, you know, and it came up, my sexual abuse, my physical abuse, being in and out of prison, my cousin dying, my drug addiction, and, you know, all those experiences that I had, you know, some at school, you know, the experiences with my brother. It seems like all the emotions, they started just hitting me one by one. Every day, every day, every day, you know, and I did not want to use, you know, so I just went to meetings, 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 and more meetings. Every day I just went to meetings, you know, and I'd break down in meetings. And even sometimes, I remember one time, even the secretary, before he can throw the meeting open, I'm heal me an addict, you know, dive straight in. You know, just to get it off, just to get it out, you know. And, you know, I was with a friend one day, and he wasn't in recovery, but we used to work together in computers and stuff. And, you know, I just broke down in his car, and he didn't know what was going on, you know. And you know, I had to give him a brief explanation what was going on with me. But I was really lucky because I knew what was happening. Right, because I'd been to treatment centre and I knew I had to let that out. You know, I couldn't keep it in. I had to let it out, and that's exactly what I was doing, you know, thanks to this, you know, this fellowship. Because, you know, I had friends, sponsorship, you know, people that I can call and meetings that I can go to, you know. And how I got over that was there was a little green caravan at Piccadilly, right, St James's Church it was called, right. Now, a friend told me about this little green caravan, right, and it was on a church ground, yeah, and it was for second and third year diploma students for counselling to catch up on their hours. People that's going along that road, they had to do a certain amount of hours of counselling, and that green caravan was there for them, you know, and I went there. Emotionally, it was one of the most the emotions I was going through were really intense. Both ends of the scales. There was one side of me, because it was a beautiful sunny day on the church grounds, right, there was bits of green, there was people talking, sitting on the grass and chatting out there for their tea breaks and stuff on a nice sunny day. There were some stalls on the courtyard of this church, and there was the church itself. And then there was this little rampart, which was stone, but you could sit on the stones as well. And I was sitting on that part, on the stones, and there were and I was, part of me was really peaceful, right? But there was the other side of me, right? Which was emotionally and mentally, the emotions were absolutely fucked. Inside, it felt like my heart was just being squeezed and manipulated and squashed, and my throat. You know, and there was the other side of me, you know, that was really peaceful and calm, you know. And I waited an hour and a half for my appointment to go into this little green caravan, and I went in there and I broke down with the counsellor, but. And I just did not stop crying through the whole session. Everything just came up all in one go. And I just kept it up and just talking about it. You know, I must have given her about fucking 5 years in a short time. And, you know, after her time was up, you know, I couldn't believe how lighter I felt. It's like when I left, I felt like I was floating. you know, when I was going home. You know, she got up afterwards, she gave me a hug and said thanks. We had a little chat, and you know, I just didn't stop crying all the way through. And when I left, I felt like, yeah, I was flying. You know, and then, suppose step one and two I've got gone through. Step two, what major part of that, standing outside that meeting at the Moors Hospital, looking inside, thinking there's people exactly the same as me, right? That became a power greater than myself, was you people, you guys, you know, because I knew that through this fellowship, right, that could restore me to sanity. You know, I remember waking up one morning, right, it was a beautiful day as well, and I realised I didn't know who I was. Well, I just, tears started coming out of my eyes. It was like the first time I'd met myself. I'd never met myself. I never didn't even know who I was. My whole life I spent running away from a child to an adult to coming out of treatment centre. I'm just laying in that bed and it's like, who am I? I didn't know. And the journey to find out started. And it's like I'm that person that was sitting on that wall with two extreme sets of emotions happening at the same time, you know, and that's the nature of addiction, you know, for me, you know, addiction means, for me, it means I'm emotionally and mentally fucked up, basically, in my language, you know, people can call it what they want, you know, it's absolutely fine, I haven't got a problem with that, but to me, it means that I haven't got a clue how to control my emotions, you know. I'm completely gone when it comes to that area. You know, and it says in the book it can be arrested. So anyway, so the journey. So so I went on one meeting. I heard this chair, and it was one of the most amazing chairs I ever heard in this fellowship. And I'll tell you why, because it touched me inside. It touched my heart, my soul, my whole being, but totally. Took him by this shares. A guy named Paul, he's passed away, he's dead now. He ODs and died. But I heard his chair, asked him to do a chair for us as well at the meeting that I was taking. He said yes. And he came in. And from there, I got to know more about the stuff that he was sharing about. And it was more of a spiritual journey. And For the next few years, I swear, I felt like I was floating on a cloud. You know the pink cloud that we get? I felt like I got enveloped by one of those, and I was just guided on this journey. It was beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And I started looking at other things outside the fellowship as well, you know, you know, as well as what I was doing in the fellowship, you know. And there was one guy who told me about this other training course, and then someone else told me about this training course, you know, from three different people. And step three for me, right, when I made that decision to turn my will, my life over, was I remember crossing the road, right, and realizing that my thinking, my ways of doing things, my ideas were totally messed up. I did not have a clue how to live life. I just did not know. But what I did know, right, there was something inside me, right, that would always guide me, that would always point me in the right direction. You know that bit when you go to, when you do something bad and you feel horrible about it, or you do something for someone out of the goodness and kindness of your heart and you feel better for it. You know, that's the gift of God. You know, it doesn't matter what the feelings are, doesn't matter what the emotions are. The important thing is that they come up, good or bad. It doesn't make no difference at all. You know, because when you feel like a piece of shit, that's saying to you, hang on, you shouldn't do that. So you change your behaviour so you don't do it. You know, so none of them are really bad feelings. You know, all that guilt, shame and stuff like that, they're not that bad. You know, they're all pointing us in the right direction, every single one of them. You know, even when we cry, like we're made like for the tears to come out of our eyes, and if they don't come out of our eyes, what's going to happen? They're going to completely mess us up. You know, they stay inside and that's it, we're absolutely fucked. You know, because that's what used to happen to me. I held them in, I would be gone. You know, now I don't do that. I just let them come and flow, and that's absolutely fine. You know. Anyway, I got onto this, and then I was doing the computer up in London. Someone said to me about this other stuff that was going on that I heard from 3-4 different places, and so I went on this course, and I was on that spiritual journey. To be honest, it completely messed it up. You know, it was about going backwards and dealing with childhood traumas and stuff like that, and it really spoiled it. But anyway, you know, hopefully I'm back onto it again. You know, I've started looking, going back down that road, more into the spiritual stuff. You know, there's one guy I follow, I won't name him, he's a spiritual teacher. You know, and I sit there and I watch this stuff, and sometimes it just blows me away. You know, it explains to me what I did not know. It explains to me stuff that I didn't know. You know, well, just it, I couldn't understand. You know, and you know, I've become aware of myself. You know. More than anything I've done in my whole life, you know, by the pointings, you know, by looking at this stuff, it's totally blown away. And the, you know, the weird thing is, right? He mentioned stuff from our literature. He mentioned stuff from 12-step fellowships, you know, and it's stuff that I didn't understand, you know. It talks about Jesus. It talks about Muslim religions. It talks about Buddhists. It talks about Hindus. And so he incorporates everything. And I think, okay, now what's, it just completely blew me away, you know? And it's nice. I love that, you know, it's took me places that I haven't got things perfect, you know, but this fellowship, I love this fellowship. I love the people in this fellowship, you know, and it's like, and the one and only reason I'm clean is because you are here. But if you wasn't here, I wouldn't be here. You know, so I'm really and eternally grateful for people like you, you know, and any meeting I go to, you know, and the step, this was a weird one, you know, when I went back out of crime again, I won't go back earlier, you know, when I come out of prison, I went back into crime and stayed clean and stuff, you know, when I got to step 8, you know, to make a list, you know, I didn't do it for 18 years. It frightened me. I got scared, you know, it really, really frightened me when I got to that step. And although I was in touch with my sponsors quite a lot, I froze. There was a part of me that just clammed up. You know, I got frightened because I'm really insecure. I'm really messed up, financially insecure, you know, and I have to have a nest egg somewhere, you know. And I think it's probably because of the way that I grew up, the shame and stuff like that, and the self-obsession, and I was going to meetings and people who's been a few years, a couple of years, 2-3 years, were sharing about doing the steps and stuff, and I'm sitting there and I'm thinking to myself, you know what, Ilmi, you've been around how many years and you haven't done the steps? You froze on step 8. It took me 18 years, right, And that guilt and that embarrassment that I felt at that meeting, I remember the last meeting, the meeting before I changed it, was, I can't do this anymore. I have to carry on with these steps. Yeah, because I felt really bad. I phoned my sponsor up, right? It took 18 years. I said to him, can we carry on with the steps? He says, yeah, of course you can. So we just carried on, you know, and went through the rest of them, you know. And I think with the steps, they're the journey back to who we are, you know. You know, you think about it, when we're born, from the time we're born, right? This is how our lives should have unfolded. This is how my life should have unfolded. You know, this is a normal life. And then what happens is we get knocked, we get beaten. You know, our experiences take us in different directions and we find different ways to act out. And different ways to do things which are not normal, which are abnormal. And that isn't our fault. It's because we don't know. We just haven't got a clue. And the steps and what happens, right? So, and well, you know what happens. We end up on drugs or prison or wherever sectioned, or we end up with fucking loony bins and all over the place until we come to this, we find a fellowship like this. But I don't think that's, you know, and I think the steps brings us back to who we're supposed to be before we became the person that we became. You know, so all them character defects that I built up as a child, I feel they were there to protect me, to stop me cracking up, to stop me going fucking barmy. You know, when I was out there committing crimes, you know, I got that excitement. You know, when I run away from home, I got that excitement. My adrenaline used to go. You know, and I was escaping from what used to happen to me at home. You know, I was terrified. When I say terrified, I mean terrified. And it's this fellowship that has brought me back. You know, so now life, it's a beautiful life. You know, I love my life, you know. I'm really and truly grateful. So, thanks for asking me to do the share, and I hand it back to you. Lots of love. Love you all. Thank you.